And thanks for joining us. I'm Frank Sesno of the George Washington University and host of Planet Forward, sitting in for Diane Rehm today. She's on a cruise with public radio listeners. Louisa May Alcott is best known for writing Little Women, the story of the March Girls, which has touched readers for more than 100 years. During a career spanning almost 40 years, Alcott wrote more than 200 works in just about every genre, including thrillers and pulp novels published under pseudonyms. Harriet Risen examines the life of the woman behind Little Women and how it influenced all her work. The book is titled Louisa May Alcott, and author Harriet Risen joins me in the studio. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Well, this is quite a work inspired by an amazing work that has inspired generations. How did you dive into this? What got you going on this?
Well, like millions of little girls around the world, and since the book was written, my mother presented me with Little Women with great ceremony, as if she were giving me the key to the magic kingdom.
When you were a little girl yourself?
Well, I was 10, maybe. Uh-huh. I think I was about 10. And I couldn't put it down, literally. So the next morning, she said, would you like not to go to school today? And she brought me jelly omelets in bed. And
you just sat there and read this book? You devoured this book?
I devoured the
book. What was it about this book that so enthralled you?
It feels like a heart-to-heart talk from the author. And it's a coming-of-age story about adolescents in a tough situation where the father is gone, so there's no patriarch. And the character of Joe March, I think, is really who enthralled me, and that is the character of Joe March is very much the character of Louisa Alcott, or part of it. So my mother was fascinated with Louisa Alcott's life and talked to me about it.
Is this one of these things that when, you know, you read this at age 10 and then put it down and didn't think about it again for another 20 years or 10 years, or did this somehow stay with you? Was there something that spoke to you from Joe March and those other girls' lives and that family that connected and endured?
Yes, and what connected and endured was the sense of, for lack of a better word, empowerment, and that Jo March is a very flawed character, and she fails.
And all the girls have their flaws, right?
Right, yes. Yeah. So it was tremendous encouragement to be who you were and to accept that and to have great dreams. And women, every woman I kind of can think of almost, has been inspired to have a career of some sort, people like Sandra Day O'Connor and also Ruth Ginsburg.
I must tell you, we have
et cetera.
My house that was given to us by my mother-in-law, this big set of these leather-bound old books, and Little Women is among them. And I remember when my daughter was younger and the kids were younger, taking that out and reading, when, you know, our reading aloud.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to think that over 140 years, how many times has this happened in families and with girls like yourself, kind of sequestering yourselves off in your bedrooms and reading through it? I mean, it's an extraordinary story of staying power of this particular book.
Yes, that there's the staying power, and it's been adapted into everything. It's been adapted into Japanese anime. There's Bollywood Little Women.
And this is still translated and sold around the world?
Oh, yes.
How many languages is this book in?
I think 55
languages.
And it also, in many Muslim countries, it's also accepted as something that girls can read.
Before we go further into your book that you wrote about Louisa May Alcott and about the PBS series or the PBS American Masters that captures this story, I just want to spend a moment on the story of Little Women itself, because you talk about how it's a story of empowerment and it's a mm-hmm. story about these girls and a family, but the those sort of enduring themes that have, you know, got it still on all these shelves 140-odd years later. How would you describe this story to someone who hasn't read it?
Little Women is the story of the March family, the four March sisters. Meg, who loves beauty and wants to marry someone wealthy, but doesn't. And Joe, who is quite the tomboy and wants to write, and wants to see the world, and just wants, it's just tremendously active. And ambitious. And then there is Beth, who is the stay-at-home sister, who dies. So she's a kind of a tragic story, but she has illness through her life.
And
she's a household saint. I mean, she's a wonderful person that is very loved and doesn't really want to go out into the world and doesn't. And then there's Amy, who is self-centered and relatively privileged within the family, and also very talented in the arts, and but wants more, wants it all, and is not as tied to the family obligations. And the father is a chaplain in the Civil War, and he is away at the Civil War. So the mother, Marmee, and the daughters have to pull for themselves and do. And that's the story. That's the power of the story. It's a girl, a coming-of-age story of four different kinds of adolescent girls.
And this author, Louisa May Alcott, who wrote this and so many other books, was extraordinary in her own right.
She certainly was, and from her birth, she was extraordinary. Her father wrote down everything she did from the moment of her birth.
Why?
Because he was a scientist in his way.
And she was an experiment?
Yes, in a way. He observed his children, the older daughter, Anna, who is Meg in Little Women, and Louisa. He wrote down what they did, so we know what Louisa was like at 4 months old.
What was she like at 4 months old?
Well, fit for the scuffle of things, tough, well, later, tough, violent, power hungry in some ways, so bright, learned to read and use speech, her father wrote. She has every article of speech, and she uses it, and her mind is lightning fast, and she's always telling stories, and half the time, I don't know what she's saying, but she does. So that's it. About two, he says that. But it's for a biographer to have this kind of record of a subject so early on is quite remarkable, and I was very happy to be able to do that.
Now, your book grew out of the PBS series that you worked on.
Yes. I was very interested in Alcott from childhood, and as soon as I moved to the Boston area, I went to Orchard House, which is where Little Women is set and where the Alcott family lived for 20 years. And I started finding out about her, and I went to my friend Nancy Porter, who's a filmmaker, and I had worked in film and television also. And as Nancy is wont to do, she said, let's make a film about her. So about 20 years later, we got the funding to make a film about her. And I wrote the script completely out of quotations, primary sources.
So her from what, her letters or chapters
of
people
letters,
around her?
Her journals. Everyone in the show speaks their own words. Emerson speaks his own words from his journals. And
as in Ralph Waldo?
As in Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of her mentors. Her father, Bronson Alcott, kept a journal that is 52 volumes long.
52 volumes?
Yes. He was a remarkable person and very controversial among readers of Little Women who know anything about Louisa Alcott. So I dug around, and also through her works. So I do have her quoting her works, but you always know in the film that this is from a work and not from her journal or letters or something where we know she was speaking for herself.
So what did you learn that surprised you the most? What in all of this 52 volumes that talked about her and all of her own journals, I mean, think of it. That was a day when people actually kept diaries and journals, and it wasn't all just email that went away into nothing. I don't think we'll ever have a biographer looking back on our time these days because people don't do this. But in all of this digging that you did, what struck you the most?
What a hero. What a heroine she is. She had such integrity and was so broad-minded and so modern that I always think if you were to go to a dinner party and she was sitting at the table in modern dress, you wouldn't know that she was someone from another century.
Talk about that time, because the century and the time period in history was really unique. And she had a very unusual childhood in terms of the political beliefs of her parents and where they were coming from. And, the women's suffrage movement began during her life. I mean, this was all happening right then and there in front of them.
She was at the center of three periods in U.S. history, with the Civil War period in the middle. In her childhood was the period of the Transcendentalists, kind of romanticism in American life. And Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson were her father's best friends.
It's not bad company to keep, is it?
Well, and yes, and they also knew everyone in the abolition movement because they were among the founders of the first anti-slavery association.
This is what she grew up in?
This is what she grew up in, absolutely. In a riot, there was a riot at one point where William Lloyd Garrison, who had the journal, The Liberator, was dragged around Boston Common by his neck, and he was 3 years old, and she hid with a portrait of another abolitionist under her bed, and she said, I was an abolitionist from the age of three because of that.
And that was considered pretty radical politics at the time.
Oh, yes, and dangerous, because there were mobs, and the economics were not on their side at
all.
How
did that shape her?
I think that in many ways she was a fighter. She was angry at how people were treated, women and slaves and other people who were not treated well. She was very attuned to all of that. She was very attuned to nature from going with Thoreau on his nature walks and literature. She just had a front row seat at what was going on. But she was a radical abolitionist. She described herself as a fanatic.
A fanatic.
A fanatic, yes. She, you know, a lot of the abolitionists actually did not favor integration. They didn't think black people were equal to white people. And they certainly didn't believe in intermarriage. And not only did she believe in it, she wrote about it.
You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're talking to Harriet Ryzin about her book on Louisa May Alcott. Our conversation continues. And welcome back to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in today for Diane, who's on a cruise with public radio listeners. Our guest right now, Harriet Ryzin. She's a former fellow in screenwriting at the American Film Institute. She's written a dramatic and historical documentary scripts for PBS, HBO, and she's got an American Masters on PBS coming. I'm holding the DVD. It's called Louisa May Alcott, The Woman Behind Little Women, and she's got a book that she's written by that same title, right?
That's right.
And she joins us now, and we're talking about Little Women, and we're talking about Louisa May Alcott. And, you know, jumping from the story when it was written 140 years ago to present day, there was no such thing as, you know, Twitter back then. But there is now, and we have some people in our audience who've sent a tweet to us here from one person. Love Joe Best, strong, somewhat unconventional, forward-thinking female character for that time, ? She asked, Little Women, one of my favorite books growing up, writes someone else. Favorite character was Beth, I think, because I wished I could be as good as she was. From Meg, it's my all-time favorite story. I also love the 1994 film with Winona Ryder and Susan Sarandon. Did you read Little Women, they ask? And Little Women had a huge impact on me as a child, writes another listener. Joe March was a kindred spirit. You find that where you go, that people connect like this to these characters?
Oh, they just light up. They just light up when you mention Joe March. And a woman in the Philippines wrote, magically the book told my story. People who don't know anything about New England or anything just completely relate to it. There's a Korean woman who said, You don't grow up to walk two steps behind your husband if you've met Joe March. It's very influential.
Really? Now, and you say that, you know, you see threads of Louisa May Alcott throughout that story, throughout Little Women.
Oh, yes. It's based on the story of her family growing up. Her father, Bronson Alcott, urged her to write it. She was not that keen to write it.
How old was she when she wrote it?
About 35.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she had been a professional writer since she was first published at 19.
Mm-hmm.
But she had mainly written thrillers and pulp fiction,
mm-hmm.
and sentimental stories for women's magazines.
And what was the reaction at the time when it was published, first published?
It was immediate in that the first volume was published, and she was asked to write the second volume right away. She wrote the first volume in 10 weeks. And then she wrote the second volume in about the same amount of time, and that is what is known as Little Women in the United States. In England, actually, it's two books.
Mm-hmm.
It says two volumes. But it just kept building, and she just realized that she was the goose that had laid the golden egg and had rescued her family from poverty and had become the equivalent of a multimillionaire.
Really? And they were poor. They were in poverty. Describe what the family situation was.
Well, if you've read Little Women, they are poor, but it's genteel poverty. Really, the Alcotts lived in grueling poverty.
Meaning what?
Meaning bread and water.
Really? They didn't have enough to put on the table?
Oh, no. Not enough to put on the table, ever, really.
What about her father? What was he doing?
Her father was talking. Her father was a very charismatic speaker. He was an educator to begin with, but he got in trouble, actually, because he was accused of talking about sex in the classroom, the facts of life. You can imagine this is 1837.
I would imagine you didn't do that sort of thing very much then.
No, and he also admitted a black girl child to the school. And this is 25 years before abolition. And he admitted this student, and all the rest of them fled, and he was never employable as a teacher after that.
So he lost his income, he lost his ability to provide for his family.
Yes, and he was such an idealist, it was fine with him. He just seemed to be floating around in some other world and was incapable or too self-centered, as other people say. But it fell to them to support the family, first her mother and then Louisa and, to a degree, the other daughters.
Now, through all these journals and all the writings that everybody left for you to go through, how was this grueling poverty that this family confronted addressed by the father, who in traditional sense is the breadwinner and he's not winning the bread here, and by the other members of the family who are being forced into, you know, to live this situation?
Well, in the remaining documents, there really is not a hint of resentment of him, although his wife was called Marmy or Mommy, both in Little Women and in life, appealed to people all the time, saying to her brother, who was an abolitionist, for money and constantly soliciting handouts, and they just got further and further in debt. So Mrs. March started taking in sewing, and at age 13, Louisa set up as a dressmaker to dolls and ran around the yards and collected little feathers from chickens and to make these turbans that were popular. And she worked every job open to women. She was a laundress, which was the lowest level of a
service. She didn't like that.
She didn't complain about it, but she didn't like teaching and being a governess, actually, most of all. She preferred sewing. She tried being a household servant and was actually looked like, what's the word? Her employer had evil intentions, she would say. You know, she was harassed. She was sexually harassed when she went out to be a household servant and then paid $4 for 7 weeks of work, which was not the going wage then either.
Her parents were involved in the Transcendentalist movement. Explain what that was and what significance that had on Louisa May Alcott.
Well, Transcendentalism was the first important American literary movement. Sometimes it's called American Romanticism. And it's hard to describe, but it's really about trusting your intuition. It's kind of anti-authoritarian. It's a great belief in instinct. It's a belief that God is found through nature. And it's quite free and easy. It was pretty co-ed compared to many other intellectual movements, too.
So how did that intellectual movement and her father's idealism, which you talked about a few minutes ago, affect her as a person and an author, do you think?
I think it taught her to be critical of the status quo, because the aspect of transcendentalism, which was somewhat anti-church, certainly anti-doctrine mm-hmm. of any kind, mm-hmm. and very suspicious of civil law. So that actually Bronson Alcott pioneered civil disobedience for Thoreau. So she really looked at the law as something more in need of reform to bring it into line with the rights of man. And women, too, because she did work for suffrage, and she actually voted. She actually voted in an election. There was a thread of suffragism, which isn't known much about, but in Massachusetts, they succeeded in getting women the vote in town meetings on issues of education, because that's what they were supposed to know about, children and education. And that the idea of it was that it would be a wedge in the door. And she voted for the town school board and rounded up people to register. I was very proud of it. But it actually turned into a dead end, and it just boomeranged on them because it was assumed that that's all they could vote about.
When did she begin writing?
Her first poem that we have, she wrote at the age of seven.
Seven.
About to the first robin. It's very sweet. The second poem is a very important poem that she wrote at the age of 10. And it's really a promise to her mother that she is going to establish her mother in comfort. You know, she says, I hope that soon, dear mother, you and I will be in that quiet room my fancy has so often made for thee. And she refers to this poem. And she is always driven, really, to lift her mother out of this abyss of poverty that this upper middle class, upper class woman has been thrown into.
She wanted to provide.
Yes, and for her sisters, and that's what she did. She became the household breadwinner and par excellence. But so, it took a long time to do it.
Right, and before she became well known as an author, she pursued other career paths in and around her writing, right? So what other things did she consider or try?
She would love to have been an actress.
An actress.
She loved the theater, and she was a professional caliber actress.
Really?
Yes.
How do you know that? How do we know that? Were there reviews? Well, did she write about it? Did others write about it?
Yes. When she was a teenager still, she was in kind of a summer stock program, but not professional. And the Boston, I think it was the Herald, but the Boston paper said she had superior histrionic ability. And she used to perform the scenes from Dickens, and she especially did this very odd Cockney character, Mrs. Jarley, and she would perform it for charity. And people would laugh for a week and talk about it, and she raised a lot of money for the Civil War hospitals actually doing that.
So how far did she get as an actress?
Well, it's possible that she actually did appear professionally on the stage, but that can't be proved. But she did agree to perform a role at the Boston Theater and was all set to do it, and she said the costume was a good disguise, so her relatives wouldn't find out. But she was going to do it. But then the producer broke a leg, which I think is pretty funny because they always say,
break a leg. Yeah, right.
And then the relations were horrified, she said. And so she didn't become a professional actress, but she was going to follow the money, and the money turned out to be in writing.
And so, I was going to ask you about that. How did she connect her writing with an income? What was she writing that got that started?
At first, she really was earning her living by sewing, and she was planning stories that she would write down on Sundays. And they were sentimental stories about innocent young girls who were pretty much alone in the world often and came into fortunes or married a wonderful guy, that kind of story. Increasingly, they became more lurid. She said, my preference is for the lurid style.
Lurid?
Lurid, yes.
By the day's standards or by presumably not by our standards of what lurid is.
Well, I don't know. She had hashish smokers and opium users and transvestites and murderers and spies. And
well, that's pretty lurid.
It's pretty lurid. And when she wrote about hashish smoking, she described the dream, the hashish dream, and she says, no one can describe it who has not been there.
So what do we think that means?
That means I think that she probably took hashish. She was quite familiar with opium because that was really the only painkiller there was, and it was legal. I think she knew the dangers and was not interested in becoming an addict that way, but I do think she may have used hashish for recreational purposes somewhat, just judging from some of the writing.
When she began selling these stories, how did the family's life change? How did her life change?
When she began, it didn't change at all. For 20 years, she pegged away at this for 20 years. And it wasn't until 1869, in her mid-30s, that she wrote Little Women. And it turned over their life entirely. I mean, this was a girl who had worked as a domestic servant and died with 10 servants of her own. And they were living on Lewisburg Square in Boston, Boston's fanciest address even now.
I'm Frank Sesno, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're talking with Harriet Reisen. She is the author of Louisa May Alcott, The Woman Behind Little Women. It is a book. It will be a PBS American Masters experience. When is it going to air?
PBS American Masters, December 28th. At 9 p.m.
December 28th at 9 p.m., so mark your calendars. And the making of this film, Harriet, how difficult was this? Because you've got all these characters, and people certainly know her work so well, so there's a certain level of expectation there. Yet, as you say, you had all of this wonderful primary source language and description and dialogue.
I don't think people know many aspects of her life. So her life story is full of surprises. And how difficult was it? It was difficult in that making any one of these films is hard. And we took about 4 or 5 years just to raise the money. And since I wrote the script out of the primary sources, I had a lot more to say to do the book. But it's impossible to make an independent documentary, as anyone who's ever done it will tell you. But we had a lot of fun. We got a wonderful actress named Elizabeth Marvel to play the lead. She's working with Tony Kushner now, actually, and will be in his next play. And it was a gas, really. You know, we were just glad it worked out. We really had luck. The camera didn't break. Nobody died. You know?
That's much better that way.
Yes.
What do you want people to come away from either reading your book or seeing this film? What sense of this woman do you want them to come away with?
I really would like them to come away with the admiration that I feel for Louisa May Alcott. I think she was a genuine American hero and deserves recognition for that.
Let's go to the phones now. We've got Anne, who joins us on the phone now. She's from Delton, Michigan, if I've got that right, Anne. I hope so.
You do.
Thank you very much, and thanks for joining us. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you for having me. My mom was Beth. Her mom was divorced. She always said that they divorced their father. And there were four daughters, and she was the youngest. She actually acted more like Jo, though. But, she was Beth. And they had, her mother read it to them when she was about five, and they acted out the parts. It was really exciting for her. She would be thrilled to know that this was on right now, but she died on the 4th of this month, so she missed it.
Well, you have our sympathies for that, but
yes.
It certainly sounds like this book has been a trademark and hallmark experience in your family.
I was going to read it to her. That was the next book I was going to read to her. Little Women. I actually just took it back upstairs.
Well, Harriet was sitting here nodding her head as you were speaking, Anne, and describing your family experiences. Harriet?
Well, my mother died recently, too, so I have the same feeling about my book, that she won't read that. But there are so many girls named Josephine and Beth and Meg and Amy, and after Little Women was published, there were Little Women clubs in colleges, and girls would be members as Beth or as Joe or as Meg or as Amy. And also, I can't tell you how many stories there are of the mother presenting Little Women, and sometimes even with the first edition that has been handed down in the family from the beginning. But it's a wonderful bond to have with your mother.
Is this, as you talk about the clubs and the spread of all of this, was this literary, do you think? Is it cultural? Is it political in some fashion?
Well, I think political in the sense of women, women feeling that they can do anything, that they should be able to have jobs. Louisa May Alcott put out really a feminist platform throughout her books in a subtle way.
Harriet Risen, author of Louisa May Alcott, The Woman Behind Little Women. We'll be back with more after this short break.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, working to help vulnerable kids and families succeed at aecf.org. By the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. By the Gruber Family Foundation, to extend the breadth and depth of NPR's international coverage. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, New York Times reporter David Rode tells us about being kidnapped by the Taliban on his way to interviewing a Taliban commander.
Several men came rushing towards our car with Kalashnikov assault rifles. It was clear that it had sort of been a well-planned ambush.
Rode escaped in June after 7 months in captivity. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Welcome back to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in for Diane today. Our guest is Harriet Risen. She is author of Louisa May Alcott, The Woman Behind Little Women. She is also the brains behind the documentary of that same name, which will be airing on PBS in December. And we are inviting our listeners to join us by calling us at 1-800-433-8850 if you have a question or comment about Louisa May Alcott. And if you have a question for Harriet Risen, the author, you may also email us at drshow@wamu.org. And we have some emails here, Harriet Risen, so
great.
I'd like to ask you about this
sure.
one that comes from Jack, I think. Did Louisa know John Brown, famous abolitionist?
Actually, she did. I don't know how much of a personal relationship she had with him, but the town of Concord really was a center of support for John Brown. And the local teacher, a guy named Fred Sanford, who was a pallbearer for Lizzie Alcott, who was Beth in Little Women, was one of the secret six who financed John Brown's raid and got in a lot of trouble. After the execution, the Alcotts boarded John Brown's daughter for a while and gave a reception for his widow. Anyway, very much knew John Brown and wrote a poem on the day of his martyrdom about a rose blooming on the day of John Brown's martyrdom.
This woman was exposed to the most remarkable people and things and times. I mean, it's hard to put your brain around just how momentous This is Civil War, post-Civil War period in this country, the changes that were taking place. Another email here, this one from Joanne. I love Little Women. I love Louisa May Alcott. I'm a 60-year-old black woman, and Jane Austen has me completely enthralled. Loves the Brothers Grimm and goes on and on. How do you find that this story translates to different ethnicities and different... Obviously, it's translated to different generations, across many generations.
I think the story is the story of many people, especially women who are often put in the position of needing to take care of themselves and who have sisters. I think that part of the charm of Little Women is this dynamic of the sisters, and they're fighting and they're getting along and just the love within a family. It's a romance of family love, and I think that's universal.
Here's a Kara who joins us on the phone now from Still River, Massachusetts. Hi, Kara.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. We live down the street from Fruitlands, which is now a museum, where Louisa May and her family lived on a commune before they moved to Concord. And she actually, when that failed, lived next door to us, and they rented a house before they moved to Concord. But the woman who lived in our house is this Mrs. Gardner that supposedly Louisa May looked up to. And my husband found in the local historical society a newspaper article that said they thought our house was the setting for Little Women. And I wondered if you could either talk about Mrs. Gardner a little bit, or if you, they went through in the newspaper the layout of our house and so forth and how it related to the story. And I wondered if you had any information about that. We've been trying to track that down ourselves.
But Harry, before you answer that question, I just have to ask you, Kara, I mean, have you ripped down all the plaster and everything to see if there are any?
Well, oddly enough, the house dates from 1784, and one of the reasons we bought it, it still had all the original wainscoting and floors, and it was very nicely laid out. And one other story was that the boy who lived here, Gardner, had play dates, basically, with Louisa May, and at one point they had to pretend marriage, and one thing led to the other, and she slapped him, and he slapped her, and so forth. But the tea set that they used for this is up at the Fruitlands Museum. So we had just found this article by accident and wanted to know a little bit more about it, if you knew of anything.
Harriet?
Oh, yes. They lived in Still River after this disastrous commune experiment, and when she actually kept her first journal at the age of 10. So you have a child's eye view of this experience when she nearly broke up her family. And while they recuperated, they went to Still River, where she was very happy. They lived in a house called Brick Ends. Is that house still there? It has brick?
It is, but the brick ends were taken off during a renovation, but it's right next door to us.
Well, I wish you would look into your walls with some kind of device, because some of her Fruitlands diary was found inside walls of a house in Walpole, New Hampshire, where they lived for a while. So there might be some things there. And the gardener, yes, Sophia Gardner was her friend. And she actually walked from Concord, you know how far that is, to Still River to visit Sophia Gardner because she liked her so much.
Wow.
Well, Kara, thanks very much, and good luck excavating your home there. If you find anything, you'll have to call us back.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's go now to another call, and Keith from Rochester, New York. Hi, Keith.
Yes, I wanted to ask about the abolitionist movement. Even in colonial times, there were enough people who were against slavery all through the years of the 18th and 19th century. There was much fervor and intensity on both sides, anti and pro-slavery. And that's the point I'm making, is that people get caught up in these, and it takes a long lead time before you do have a cataclysmic event like the war between the states. People may not be as vociferous about it as William Lloyd Garrison on the anti-slave and a John C. Calhoun on the pro, but I guess why I'm calling is that you make it sound like, in the case of your subject, that she was alone in this, and there was much swirling and many intense events going on, and I just wish you would, in the context, there was much rancor going on, nothing like we think of the placid 19th century. It wasn't. There's always fervor and intensity going on, and I just wish you would acknowledge that many people felt this way.
Well, Harriet, what about that?
Well, that is absolutely true, and I know that Bronson Alcott thought the outbreak of the Civil War was abolition's greatest day because it was finally going to be settled. on the battlefield. And in fact, Louise May Alcott's ancestor, Samuel Sewall, wrote one of the first anti-slavery tracts. And Samuel Sewall was a judge in the Salem witch trial. He was the only judge who recanted, who admitted that he was wrong, and he wrote this tract called The Selling of Joseph. That was in the 1600s, the Salem witch trials.
Now,
yes, it's a long, distinguished history.
Right, and Louise May volunteered as a nurse for the Union Army and did this for her own reasons. What took her in that direction?
Well, it was the closest she could get to fighting the war.
She wanted a fight of the war?
She would have fought as a soldier.
If she could.
If she could have. And until she turned 30 years old, which was the minimum age for nurses, she was sewing uniforms and doing whatever she could. And she did also love nursing, but there was no nursing schools then. She was just thrown into it with no experience at all.
Here's an email from Joshua. He writes, I wonder if the guest has any thought or comment about the novel March, the story of Captain March's adventure recently published. He says it connected with me deeply, perhaps because I'm a boy or was when it was assigned. Little Women never resonated with me as it has with so many girls and women, but the other story really did.
Well, there are many girls and women who do not resonate to Little Women. And that should be clear. Some of them just say, oh, they hate Beth. She's just so boring. And they find it kind of moralistic and preachy, and I understand that, but those that it does speak to are affected very deeply. March is a wonderful book. Geraldine Brooks is in our film, actually, and talks about it and makes the great point that in Little Women, the father is off at war, and that is, it's not because Louisa May Alcott had a difficult relationship with her father, which is often said, and couldn't bear to have him in the book, but because, for story reasons, the girls have to step up to the plate and when he's gone. It's a very imaginative book, March, and it imagines what Mr. March, a.k.a. Bronson Alcott, would have been like and had that experience. And it's a very valid story. There's so much to tell about Bronson Alcott.
Back to the phones, and Stephanie from Ellensburg, Washington. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share how much Little Women was the first book I read all the way through. and I was 12 when I did it, much of a reader until I read Little Women, and I identified with every single one of the characters. I was Jo because I was a tomboy and wanted to, after reading, I wanted to become a writer. I was Amy because I was the youngest and obviously a girl. I was Beth because I just thought how wonderful she felt, so complete in just her domestic duties, and she just, that's all she wanted to do because that's all she probably felt that she was going to do. And of course Meg and the stories after she marries Mr. Brooke, and and I just thought, oh my gosh, is that the way marriage really is and can be, and when it is at the beginning? And at the beginning, my marriage was a little rough, and we still loved each other. So, it was great.
Well, all kinds of lessons there for you.
Yes. I did find it a little preachy at times, but at the same time, it was like there was still the lesson to be learned. It was an easy way to swallow the pill, really, of, the moralistic and to stand up for what you believed in.
Thanks, Stephanie. It's interesting listening to this and then turning it to the author, because she never married. She didn't look for the idealized or any other relationship at the end, did she?
No, she didn't, for many reasons. One was the position of women in marriage and what she had seen of marriage. She said, from what I've seen of marriage, I'm afraid to try it.
So she wrote about this. You found this in her diaries and journals, and we know what she felt about her own situation.
We know some of what she felt. She had proposals. She had suitors. She said they were all queer. She had one offer of marriage that it was said that she did seriously consider it because the man was wealthy and it would have helped the family out.
In your book, you have a quote that we have here. I'd rather be a free spinster and paddle my own canoe.
She did. But the trouble was she had a very large load of passengers in that canoe, the entire Olcott family sitting in the back. So, yes, she wanted to be independent, and she felt very obligated to her family, especially after her sister died. She not only had to be the breadwinner, but she had to be the housekeeper and that take care of her elderly parents.
You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno. And we're talking with Harriet Risen. She is author of Louisa May Alcott, The Woman Behind Little Women. We're taking your calls now at 1-800-433-8850. That's 1-800-433-8850. Or you can email us at drshow@wamu.org. To the phones now, and Bill from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Go ahead with your question or comment for Harriet.
I was going to say that, as I told your operator, that everybody seems to think, well, not everybody, but everybody seems to think that it's a book for young girls. I wish to differ on this because I think it's an extraordinary novel, and in that it teaches young people, or grown people for that matter, to think for themselves, which is something we sadly lack in our time. By the way, I'm 88 years old.
How old were you when you read this book for the first time?
Read it when I was 70 because I wasn't allowed to read it when I was a boy, but I did read Little Men on the Sly.
Why were you not allowed to read it as a boy?
Because it's a girl's book. I was told that constantly that it was a girl's book, but I think it's a terrible thing. It's a classic. There's no question about it.
Okay, Harriet, take that. It's a girl's book, or so he was told.
Well, there is a very distinguished contingent of men who love Little Women. One of them was the biographer Justin Kaplan, who told me that, with tears in his eyes, that he had read it. I also had a friend who had four older sisters, and he read everything of Louisa Alcott to get them, you know, figure out what they really were like. He felt it was the key to the mystery. So I'm glad you feel that way, and there certainly are men who enjoy it. She wanted to have boys in her audience. That's one reason she wrote Little Men.
What happened to Louisa May Alcott in later life, her health issues and toward her later years?
She had many difficulties, multiple symptoms. And she believed that they were the result of being given calomel, a mercury compound, in the Civil War. She contracted typhoid pneumonia while she was a nurse in Washington. And her health was never good, but also felt that she had made a sacrifice that she believed in of her health. However, recently, a couple of doctors have gone through all her journals and put the symptoms together, and they have another explanation for why she died, what she died of.
Which is?
I don't know. I think you might have to read the book to find out. But the clue is in the portrait. There is a portrait of Louisa May Alcott, and the symptom of this autoimmune disease, which they believe she had, which was lupus. But they found it, this butterfly rash, which is a very important diagnostic sign of lupus. But it's all in the book, too.
And in the film?
And in the film. Mm-hmm. And this is new. It has not been in any book before.
So let me ask you this question that's a little different, a little odd. If she were around today, what do you think she'd think of the world as she sees it? What do you think she'd write?
Well, I think she would probably write more explicitly about sex and the struggle between the sexes. A lot of her work, especially in the thrillers, have that very strongly. Power struggles between the sexes. And I do think that was an important aspect of her life, which continues. I think that she would be kind of dismayed at the values. I know we can say that Little Women is preachy, but hey, you know, what's wrong with being good and being generous to the poor? And I think, in fact, actually, the insistence of the Alcott family on generosity to those less fortunate, which led to them having two meals a day of bread and water to have enough to give away, was very important in sustaining their own sense of worth and their own status to themselves. So,
she'd be a best-selling author today, do you think?
Oh, yeah. She could tell a great story. She was a great plotter.
All right, Harriet Risen, you can't spend this amount of time that you have spent studying someone like this and knowing her work and reading all of her words without having some amount of revelation, inspiration, whatever it is. If I rocked you back, it's not that bad. But What are you left with as you sort of walk out the door in terms of thinking about this remarkable author who's touched so many millions of lives over the years?
Well, she is inspiring, and she touches my heart in a way that I think she touched the hearts of other readers. And I feel here was this dynamo just born with so much energy and enthusiasm, such vitality. And she went out and she had every kind of job. She had a fascinating life. She was a self-made millionaire. Wow, I guess is my response. I keep saying, wow, how surprising. And then even yesterday I found something out that it surprised me.
Louisa May Alcott, The Woman Behind Little Women. It is a book by Harriet Rison. It is an American master on PBS, airing in December. Harriet Rison, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Thanks for listening.